and welcome to Technically Speaking, where scientists and engineers come together to chat about a common interest, share knowledge, and satisfy some curiosity. I'm Ellie, and I'm joined by Laura, Antonia, and my cat Sparkles to talk about the world sand shortage and the impacts this has. Sparkles, you don't know that much about the world sand shortage, I'm afraid, so you can't be in the episode as much as you would like to be. But Antonia, you brought this topic to the table. What do we need to know about the world sand shortage?
Sand seems abundant. It's coarse, rough, and gets in everywhere. So How could we possibly be short of it? Sorry, I forgot to state my source of that quote. That was Anakin Skywalker from one of the prequel films.
Is that actually his quote? That's hilarious.
Yeah. He was talking about hating sand, like, didn't want to go to a beach.
That's because he grew up on a sandy planet, is it? Hang on, am I thinking of the right person?
Yes. Yes, no, he did. He came from Tatooine, which is a desert planet.
This is Star Wars. Let's carry on.
I'm all about all things sustainable development, so I was interested to see in what way is sand a limited resource.
It was interesting you mentioned development, because we'll find out later that much of sand is used for construction and concrete and building materials. Laura, you know something about concrete and glass, much more than Sparkles would have us believe. She's so loud, I can only apologise. She's got a bee in her bonnet.
It's quite entertaining. There's no way around it. We can't just wait for the cat to finish talking to you. So we'll just carry on. I just find it quite funny.
She does have a voice in this one.
Yeah, special guest starring Sparkles, who is apparently a world authority on sand mining.
She did come from a sandy country, though, didn't she?
Yeah, she came from Dubai, so.
Ah, well, there you go. Maybe she knows. But to answer your question, what do I know about concrete and sandy-related things? So I supervised quite a few PhD research projects that were looking at structural concrete or glass, both used in the nuclear industry. And the glass in particular was quite interesting, I think, because we were using it to immobilise nuclear waste. So you had to understand the chemistry and how it would evolve with time quite well. I suspect that's a little bit outside of this topic. So I'll be interested to see what Antonia's thoughts are on sustainability and sustainable development.
Yeah. Antonia, I believe you have a very exciting fact to start us off.
Behind water, the most used resource across the globe is sand and gravel. It is estimated that 50 billion metric tons of sand and gravel is consumed annually, which is enough to cover the UK.
Wow, that's a ridiculous number. Does it cover the UK like there's a thin layer?
Now that I wasn't sure about. This came from a BBC article which was good at presenting these facts and then putting it into some sort of context.
Yeah.
But then you scratch the surface and yeah.
I like the attempt to make this really quite big number into something a bit more tangible, though.
50 billion tonnes is a phenomenal number. And you said it was the most mined resource after water? Is that what you said?
Or consumed, yes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily mined, as you don't go into the ground to dig it up. It's just kind of there on riverbeds and you scoop it up or dredge it up.
So what are we using all of this for then? Where does all this sand go?
It's mostly for construction. So maybe not so much in the UK, because we were a little bit behind on construction projects. You know, quite well-developed country now. And, you know, the UK doesn't have that much uncovered land anymore.
Well, most of it's green space, isn't it? It's mostly used for farming or national parks. I think only about 5% of the land area is built on, I think.
But it's mostly got some sort of impact of humans now.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's more about developing countries where population growth is exponential. And so improving quality of life, people wanting houses, people wanting to be in places where there are jobs. So what we call urbanization, people are moving away from rural areas to be in cities because there's more opportunity. So lots more buildings are happening.
That estimate of 50 billion tons of, I think they said aggregates or sand and gravel. It looks to me like it's a very rough and ready estimate. It came from a United Nations report. I think there were a few versions of it. I found one from 2014 that seemed to be the first mention of it. And it did say, here are a few sources that cite different global amounts. We don't really know. I'm going to estimate it from what the construction industry tells me, because they tend to track some of their building materials.
What I read in the 2019 UN Environmental Programme report was countries do track how much concrete they use. And so using a sort of rough percentage of how much sand and gravel that made up, they worked backwards from concrete to get to this 50 billion tons.
Yeah, see, I find that a little bit strange in a way, in that there's not a lot of information about where these natural resources come from and where they go.
Yeah.
Stuff just kind of happens. But then again, on a global scale, it probably is quite difficult to keep track of all these things. The UK is like really highly regulated for most things that we do, but other nations, not so much.
No.
So they wouldn't necessarily be interested in the bureaucracy that the UK creates.
Yes, we've seen what happens there. We don't want to copy that, do we? Also, it comes from it being a cheap resource. People really care about gold and how much gold is available.
Oh, I see what you mean. So in comparison, people care less about sand because it is seemingly abundant.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all sand's equal though, is it?
That's true.
Construction sand needs to have certain properties. It's called sharp sand because it has these rough edges so it can help bind the concrete or the grout or whatever it is. Whereas I think we'd read that sand that comes from the desert, because it's subject to weathering from the wind and rolling against each other, the little sand grains, they become really smooth. So they don't make good concrete.
So you can't just go to the Sahara where there is abundance of sand and start scooping?
It would seem not, which seems odd, doesn't it?
It seems very odd, because I thought, if you need lots of sand, let's go to the sandiest place in the world, start shoveling. I also read that most sand now that is mined or extracted or scooped up from riverbanks is going to Asia. That seems to be the world's highest demand of sand.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this sort of idea of a shortage is more that the sand isn't available in vast quantities locally. So there might be a good amount of sand across the world, but we don't always need that sand there right now. So there's a lot of sand being mined one place to rebuild or build more land, like in Singapore.
Something like 20 square miles, that might be wrong, or they had like increased their land area quite significantly by using sand from different countries that had been shipped there to reclaim lost land from the sea, which is, I mean, fascinating, but also not a use I would have considered for sand.
It kind of makes me think of the nursery rhyme, the man who built his house on sand.
Oh gosh, that's taken me right back.
They're not literally just like piling up sand and saying, look, we increased our land mass. They must be incorporating it into something similar to how you make concrete. So, you know, you mix the sand with Portland cement and water in some other type of aggregate.
Yeah, there must be something more to it. I don't think they're just pouring sand into the ocean in the hopes that it will rise up to a level above where it is now.
I would expect it would just get washed away, but then I suppose it depends on the local currents. But what you were asking about, Asia seems to be one of the biggest importers. I guess that ties into what Antonia was saying about the countries that are still, they're developing, right?
Yeah.
And they're growing housing stock and apparently land mass by quite a lot to account for growing populations and growing industries.
Absolutely, yeah. This is it. Singapore has expanded its land area by 22% using sand primarily from Malaysia, Cambodia and Indonesia as fill, which is absolutely wild to think you could reclaim that much of one country. Extend one country? I don't know what even you would call that.
Until they bridge a gap and merge with another country and then something else happens.
There are some smaller, well, slightly less bigger slices of the pie chart of sand use that we know about as well.
All right. What is a slice?
The slice. Weren't we saying before about solar panels?
I guess. I don't think I really explained at the start. So I talked about making glass, and glass is made from silica, or silicon dioxide, which is a component of sand. So yeah, solar panels are also, they're made from silicon, not necessarily because they've got glass in them, but because they're made from a silicon wafer, which is a basis for a lot of electronic components.
Oh.
And again, you need a source of silica for that, so it's something sandy. But when I was looking into it, they need like really pure silicon dioxide or silica to begin with. So they tend to use, I think, a raw material called quartzite. A form of quartz sandstone rock type thing. So it's essentially made by sandstone being compressed over time. So you wouldn't necessarily be digging it out of rivers or wherever else. You would find a deposit somewhere like you would with other minerals, you know, like lithium to make batteries or rare earth metals to make other electronics. So it needs to be pure. In theory, I assume you could scoop something off the beach and purify it, but that would incur an extra cost and lots of extra processing steps. From the glass industry, again, not necessarily solar panels, but glass accounts for about 1% of that 50 billion tons of sand extracted every year. So it's quite a small, very small slice of the pie, I guess.
Yeah.
One thing I did wonder, though, when I was reading about quartzite, is most solar panels, from what I've read, are made in China. Also, from what I've read, China doesn't seem to have a quartzite deposit. So either they do and they're not telling anyone about it.
Oh, sneaky.
Interesting.
Or they're importing it. And then I start to wonder, well, what happens to the quartzite and what happens to the other materials that they need? Where do they come from? This is turning into a much bigger picture than just sand. It's about resource use in general.
Yes, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I also read, which I didn't know, that sand can be used in some sort of combined liquid form as fracking material.
Correct.
Injected into the earth.
It's part of the fracking fluid is what they call it. You put in high pressure water, sand, and essentially make fissures where you know there is more natural gas or oil available. And right. Blasting it at high pressure, you kind of force it to open more. And hopefully, when you bring it all back, you get some useful stuff, like oil and gas.
Yeah.
That is also not a huge use of sand, though.
No.
But it is one of the uses of sand.
So this leads to, where does all this sand come from? Because we mentioned that we can't get it. We can't just go to the Sahara and scoop. So which countries do we think are shipping out the most amount of sand?
One of the points that the UN report was getting at was that a lot of it comes from areas that don't necessarily have a lot of legislation around human rights or environmental conditions. I want to say they effectively use slave labour, but that might be taking it a little bit too far. But I don't know which countries that then applies to. I don't know if you've got any ideas, Antonia.
No, I don't know where the sand is coming from. I did have a look at, if we were to mine for it in the UK, what are the rules around that? It's subject to any other sort of mining regulations. Got to have permission from the landowner, and the British Geological Society looks at sort of the scarcity of the resource, so they know, are you going to mine above what is available in the UK and things like that. But if that's what the UK does, is that what happens elsewhere? So yeah, maybe slave or child labour can come into it in other countries.
Because I read that Britain, we do mine our own sand, or we mine some of our own sand, and we get up to a quarter of our sand from the sea floor. 10 million tonnes of it come from sandbanks off East Anglia, near me, in the North Sea. And of the sand that we were talking about for Singapore, so this is interesting, it says that most of the sand has come from Indonesia, where 24 small islands have reportedly been removed from the map as a result of all of this sand mining, which is absolutely wild.
So as in those islands got flooded? Because, you know, the removal of the sand meant water flow was different around there. Or did they literally just dig up that island and move it to Singapore?
I think that's probably almost more likely, that they've completely, I don't want to say wiped out the island, but yeah, it doesn't exist anymore because they've mined it away, I suppose.
But all of that activity must have some effect on the local environment. Whether it's changing water currents or affecting the wildlife or something else in that area that I can't think of because it's not my area of expertise.
The only thing I knew about this before we started researching it for this episode, I wrote an article for work about the world's only freshwater porpoise. They're also called the smiling porpoise because they, if you Google them, they're smiling. But they're really called the Yangtze River finless porpoise. You won't be surprised to learn that they live in China's Yangtze River. They are one of the world's most critically endangered animals. And one of the reasons why they're so endangered is because they live in this river, which is being destroyed due to the sand industry. These porpoises breed in quite shallow riverbank areas where they raise their little finless porpoise babies. But those shoreside habitats are where the sand mining is sort of most active. And without those areas, it's really decimated the population.
Wow. See, I think that's the sort of thing that probably should be taken into account. So, like, you know, you said in the UK that you have to check that you're not taking more than is available. Presumably there is also some sort of environmental impact assessment that says you're not harming any species that can't get nutrients or breeding grounds or whatever somewhere else in the UK. So they won't have a significant effect on their population, whereas that is completely the opposite.
Yeah. So apparently illegal sand mining has become more closely monitored since 2017. And they think that that will massively help the Yangtze finless porpoise, but also people are still trying to make money. There's always going to be a bit of sort of shady sand goings on in that area, they think. And there is still legal sand mining on the Yangtze River anyway, so yeah. That's pretty sad. I also read, because I was saying about the UK being marine dredging, whatever you want to call it, but that causes a lot of problems with things like turbidity, like the cloudiness of the water, which is really affecting seagrass and corals, because the water's too cloudy, you can't photosynthesize, that becomes a big problem. And then it's having a knock-on effect. If there's no seagrass, animals like dugongs, look a bit like manatees, in Southeast Asia are suffering because they don't have enough to eat because they eat the seagrass. So it's heartbreaking, really. It's huge effects on ecosystems.
And I think that's the sort of thing that should probably be understood in more detail. But I can also see how it would be really difficult to understand it, because there's an awful lot we still don't know about the natural world necessarily, and that the interconnectedness of all the species in a particular environment. But you would think before you do anything, you would look at the existing knowledge and say, well, there's nothing there that says that we shouldn't do this, so let's try it and we'll monitor it and we'll put some monitoring in place. But it sounds like that doesn't happen in a lot of parts of the world.
Yeah. There was also a study I read that said they were getting it from, I think, a lake area. And this lake area was critical in the migration of cranes. And because the cranes only come at certain times of the year, they didn't necessarily realise taking all the sand from this area was going to massively upset one of the world's largest populations of cranes.
I think one of the bigger challenges in a lot of environmental issues is the resource for monitoring, is because we're trying to monitor such large areas. Even if you had someone to go check the area, like how far can the eye see?
I think if you start messing with any ecosystem, generally things don't go well for the animals in that area.
So I was reading an article about a tributary of the Ganga River in India, and how there was a legal mining license, except they were going beyond the times when the license was allowing them to mine. So they were supposed to only mine like 2 or 3 meters into the river, and at some places they mined 18 meters deep, but from the surface you can't necessarily tell. So in fact, some children went to the river to wash, and then they got pulled into these deep pits and died.
Oh my goodness. So it's sort of a community impact as well then, of the local people living in this area, not just the workers and the wildlife.
Yeah. But then also, because these issues are also managed on the local level, if, say, you know who the local official is, they are, say, what's the word, more pliable?
I was going to say more open to corruption.
Yes, that was the word. And so the locals had started reporting that this was an issue, and the local authorities kind of said, it's not an issue.
There is a lot of illegal sand mining that seems to be a big problem as well, that you can get a lot of money by selling it to concrete makers, sort of on a much more small scale level within your own town or within your own city.
I find that a bit weird that there's like effectively illegal construction practices going on. And I guess it kind of points to some of the work where that Antonia's mentioned before, where you try and look at where all your resources come from and how sustainable are they, and have you done due diligence on your supply chain to make sure that everything is meeting with the UN goals for sustainable development as much as possible. And if they don't, then you just don't use that company. I can also see that sustainable development is less of a priority in a lot of parts of the world though.
And I think supply chain transparency is still a huge issue. You know, you just kind of go down to, if you were just a construction worker, you go down to your local yard, hopefully the closest one to where you're building, and you just ask for sand, and how much sand can you get to this spot? And you don't necessarily care where the sand came from, you just needed the material.
What about alternative sources? If we say that this, you know, sand mining from places like the Yangtze or off the coast of Southeast Asian islands isn't sustainable or is causing a lot of ecological impacts, is there anywhere else that we could be getting this sort of sand?
I read a few research papers a while ago now that were published that looked at using the LCD screen, so the glass from the screen, I guess, as a replacement for the sharp sand that's used in construction.
Oh, wow.
I think that was quite a niche research paper. I don't know how much effort it would take to collect up all the LCD screens in the world and what massive silica that would be. So how much of this 50 billion tons are we replacing if we start using waste electronics?
I like that idea, because I feel like waste electronics are a huge, I was going to say gold mine, because they are a literal gold mine of precious metals.
I'm also I'm not entirely sure that using quite a high value item like a smartphone, say, to stick in some construction project is the best use of resources necessarily. I don't know.
I don't know either. And also because we were saying before about how the sand has to be a particular type of sand, reclaimed LCD screen sand, is it even going to work?
So one thing that people are saying when they couldn't find the natural sand being as sharp as they want it is just crushing up rocks. So hopefully, if we can crush rocks, we can crush glass to be similar. But I think there's a lot of other sources of what we call aggregate, just stuff that we put into concrete that's generally stone-based stuff. So when you mine, you don't necessarily get, you know, just straight-up gold bullions. You have to get gold ore. And in the process, you dredge up a lot of material out of the ground. And often, they're just kind of dumped. So if we got those, what they call mine tailings, you can use those as an alternative source for sand.
True. Assuming you know what's in your mine tailing, there's a few mines around here that aren't in use anymore, that they've had to cap them and seal them because the mine tailings are full of stuff like cadmium that's become really concentrated and it started leaking into rivers.
You don't want the cadmium type sand.
You don't want those mine tailings.
No.
I guess the reason that the illegal sand extraction and the reason for extracting sand from riverbeds and wherever else is such a prevalent thing is because it's so easy to do. It doesn't necessarily introduce any extra processing steps that these would.
No, that's true.
I think the concern is that because it takes thousands of years to create a sand with that particular sort of properties because it's been washed through a river, that it's being depleted faster than it's being created.
Yes.
Exactly what that rate is, no one knows though.
No, I think there's a lot of unknowns about this sort of mysterious sand extraction industry. But we don't massively understand the numbers, do we? We've only got sort of a best guess estimate based on concrete. And it seems like there's a lot of it still happening that isn't, well, not monitored even, but sort of known about in the first
place. Yeah, and I think it's quite a new environmental / social issue that's been highlighted, because most of these UN reports that we've seen, the earliest one you said, Laura, 2014, kind of says it's just not something we've tracked or realised up until recently.
Well, I would say I never even thought about it until 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And yet it's one of the second most extracted resources in the world. So, yeah, maybe it is all something we should be paying a lot more attention to.
I know I shouldn't have been surprised, but the idea of sand mafias.
Like gangs of people controlling access to sand.
Yeah. And I just thought, you know, of all the materials to sort of smuggle, I never thought about smuggling sand.
Yeah, people think diamonds, don't they? Diamonds, gold.
Just purely the logistics of how that works.
Yeah. There seems there's a lot more to this than I think we ever really suspected that we were getting into.
Along with every other environmental issue, the main things to do are reduce how much sand you're using and use alternatives if you can, and track sand usage more.
Which leads me very nicely into my next question. Laura, if you were in charge of global sand mining or sand extraction across the world, what would you be your next steps? What are you looking to achieve? Bearing in mind that sand is a necessary needed resource at the moment.
I think it probably is similar to what Antonia said. I mean, I'm a scientist, right? And I've spanned many different topics of science in my 20-ish years since leaving university. And you start off with collecting data, right? So you want to understand just how widespread this challenge is. So how much sharp sand is there in the world still? Can we quantify that? How much are we really extracting every year? And then what does that mean for how quickly is it actually going to run out? And where can we find other sources that are easy to access, whether it is LCD screens or mine tailings or something else? I also think it sounds like there needs to be a really easy way to do this, because it's taken, 10 years to get to the point since that first United Nations report of making people realise that this is starting to be a problem.
Yeah.
I would imagine it would take at least another 20 years to start to get the global sand industry to even think about doing anything about it, because all they really want to do is keep doing what they're doing and keep making money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there some intelligent way of doing that? I mean, given recent advances in AI or machine learning, if you prefer, and other technological inventions, could there be an easy way of figuring out how to do this? I don't know, using satellite imaging as a starting point, maybe?
I think people have started using satellite images to see land loss and land changes or river and water changes, kind of two sides of the same coin, seeing how things have changed over time, kind of tells them it's being extracted. There was even this tiny, tiny speck on a picture, which was the little digger. But who's looking at those images? At least it's easier than physically going to all those places.
Antonio, what would you do? Do you have any points to add to Laura's in control of all global sand development position, CEO, I've just given you?
I would like to say just common sense, because there was a story about how one river got mined so much that the river flow went the wrong way.
Ooh.
So they got seawater mixed into their fresh water and started getting, what was it, an alligator or a crocodile?
Yeah, crocodiles.
And I just think there's got to be a smarter way.
Maybe let's not do that.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily sure that's something I would have considered, though, if I were in control of operations in the area. And I'm like, just keep extracting it, keep extracting it. Let's make more money, keep extracting it. I wouldn't have thought, oh,
we're going to get crocodiles.
Yeah, we've just created an inland sea now. Oops.
We definitely don't want inland sea. We want our fresh water to stay fresh water. Seawater to stay seawater.
It is very multifaceted. It'll be really interesting to see where this goes and what the next sort of 10, 20 years reveal. Will it just be greed and unkeep-upable building and construction across developing nations? Or will there be a push for more sustainable sand practices? It's very hard to just generate sand. We have an abundance of sand because for millions of years we've had rivers and they've worn away rock.
True, but then it's one of those things that the more research you do and the more you scale up whatever operation you've created that can industrially create sand or aggregate with the same properties, then the cheaper it becomes. So it might at some point in the future become cheaper and more favourable to just manufacture the sand than it is to go and dredge out of a river.
Oh.
We have to think about what is the use of the sand in the first place. If you've ever redone a kitchen, everyone just chucks out whatever was in the kitchen, goes into a skip, and then what happens to it, right?
Wash your hands of it.
You knock down a wall. Where does that go? What do you do with all that broken brick? I'm pretty sure no one is recovering those broken bricks. They just make new bricks. Same with, like, concrete.
There are examples in the construction industry of this happening. I'm sure Rueda, who's our resident civil engineer, has mentioned this to me before. But I don't think it's all that widespread.
No.
So I think there needs to be more of reusing of what is considered waste. So essentially circular economy, as we've discussed in an earlier episode, Antonia.
I hope we can get to that point of a much more sustainable way of doing this with much less social and environmental economic impact. Well, I think maybe that is a good place to leave it. We've covered pretty much everything from what is the world sand shortage, where all that sand is going, where is it coming from, and what potentially could we do instead. If you like this episode, please stay tuned for our next one, and we'll see you next time.
The views expressed in this podcast belong entirely to the person that said them. They do not represent any industry or organisation. If you enjoyed listening to these views, it would really help us out if you could rate us, leave a review and tell a friend. This podcast was sponsored by no one, but if you're interested in funding us to continue to have frank discussions about science and engineering, please get in touch.